Welcome to the Social Expedition. Fueling your digitally social experience. This is show number 16, January 21st, 2010.
So, Sweet 16, podcast is coming of age.
Where's my car?
Oh, it's maturity.
Where's my hover car? I'm just going to keep going back to that.
The hover car?
My hover car. I was told by 2010 I would have a hover car.
Oh, well.
And now we're 16, too, so
well,
I feel like...
Well, still got to go to, like, 2015 before, like, the hoverboard is promised, as well as those Nikes that lace themselves and dry themselves off.
I would just like to be able to teleport, if we can just work on that.
Whoa.
I want a nice glass facade on the Hill Valley Courthouse. Come on.
Where's
Back to the Future Part 2?
Oh, sorry.
Come on, guys.
That was like, wow.
I pictured the clock there for a second, but...
Flux capacitor.
I've even been there.
I got nothing.
Universal Studios in California. Well, so yeah, so this is the 16, coming of age. Well, social media definitely is not. It's definitely in its adolescence, just crazy bouncing off the walls, full of hormones and doesn't know where to stop. There's all kinds of things going on right now. I guess a lot of action is kind of spurred on by the Consumer Electronics Show, the CES.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of news there, a lot of great little devices out there, many of them.
CES season sort of like spearheads a lot of big product announcements.
It's kind of weird that happens that way.
Google's Nexus One wasn't part of the CES, but its timing was definitely geared towards that. And there's always the Macworld conference that comes up in early February. And Apple's decided not to take part in that, but they've got a big press event coming up on the 27th. And a lot of people are thinking that they might release a new tablet computer to like fit in whatever space there might be between the iPhone and the MacBook.
Whatever space that is.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't see a space for a tablet in my life. I mean, I've got an iPhone, I've got a laptop.
Yeah, so, yeah. The crazy things we're using these days that are commonplace that nobody had ever, you know, had any inclination of, you know, having a place in society that we now kind of count on. It's funny. Who knows? We'll be tablet junkies.
Yeah, the new spate of like of really user-friendly iPhone or user-friendly smartphones like the iPhone and the Android. Well, anything running on Android.
Okay, just as long as you're saying it, such as that kind of like the iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe one day I might still get my hover car? Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is like this recent spate of really user-friendly smartphones is...
Hover car-esque?
It's hover car-esque. It's as close to the future as... It's the Back to the Future, Jetsons kind of future that we're finally seeing like little hints of.
I need to go watch that movie again, I guess. So, hey, what else is going on? What else is happening?
Yelp actually introduced the same kind of check-in feature that Foursquare has, and Foursquare is none too happy. Of course, we heard a little bit of a rumor earlier today that Yelp is also doing some other things that are making people a little angry.
Yeah. You know, a lot of companies try and protect their ideas with patents, but all it takes is an equally adept team of attorneys on the opposing side to figure out how to poke holes in what you have so they can get away with their...
Pre-existing art, what have you.
You know,
absolutely.
Get away with their, you know, their idea on it. And
you've just got to figure out how to do it the best way. I think that's the bottom line. It's like there's so many social networks that want to, you know, come out of the woodworks and social tools, and a lot of the ideas are going to be similar. So you have to be the one that does it the best. I mean, that's really all there is to it.
You know, it seems like it's like a big community that's just working on these product developments and... you know, instead of let's say in this case Foursquare coming out with its version 2.0 of whatever, you've got other companies that are adding features to that type of idea, you know, which no doubt Foursquare would volley back with, you know, even better things on top of that. And while these battles are going on, we the consumers are kind of left to, okay, what am I going to use? You know, getting used to moving in and out of platforms. What else did you find up there?
Well, it looks like there's a lot of abandoned Twitter usernames out there. Like you, if you're thinking about signing up for Twitter, if you haven't already, you might want to type in www.twitter.com/the username you want just to see if it's taken. And maybe somebody's already there and they only posted once and it was like a year ago. Twitter is actually going to open up a lot of those accounts again. For people to re-register. So some people are thinking that, like, if they announce the time that that's going to happen, you're going to see a huge land grab, like when Facebook opened up usernames.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of the first names taken, actually, was facebook.com/index.html.
Really? You know, I think it's a little bit different between what's going on with Twitter and then what happened with Facebook. Because Facebook, it was just a brand new thing, pretty much, you know, universal here.
Yeah, right.
You know, Twitter's releasing these unused.
Right.
You know,
but technically, they
previously claimed.
Belong to someone.
Yeah, you know, so why aren't they, why isn't somebody going to be in front of a judge talking about this? That's what I kind of wonder, because.
Mm-hmm. I'd be pretty ticked myself.
You know, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we all know the deal. I mean, we've all had, for example, email addresses, just to go back to an, you know, something that seems sort of old school mm-hmm. now even. We've all had an email address that we went months, maybe a year or two without checking. That just got, just fell by the wayside. But that doesn't mean there's not stuff still there that I want, or maybe an email that I need.
Oh,
I still want to be able to get into that profile, and you know, I'm still coming back to it. It's like, you know, no takesies backsies. You know, I claim that seat, don't take it. It just seems uncool for Twitter to be like, actually, we're gonna take that back.
Speaking of taking back,
that's the pain train coming for
yes.
those who are gonna have their accounts deleted.
Yeah, because you know, companies are out there that have secured their names and they thought, okay, we'll just get into the Twitterverse later, but right now we just want to grab her name. There was no warning whatsoever signing up for your Twitter account that you had to have a tweet at least once every 6 months, or Twitter was going to, you know, put it back in the soup.
No.
In the cupboard.
No.
Not even the soup on the table, but back in the cupboard.
No. I call shenanigans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll hear more about this, too. Yeah. Wow. Kind of like domains. You know, we've been, you know, that's a... You know, for a couple decades now, that's been an ongoing story. And these, you know, these names are just as important, you know, and sometimes maybe even more important than your domain name.
Absolutely.
You know, a good Twitter handle or Facebook. Mm-hmm. So that's why we encourage people, if you're a business and you realize that your name's already been taken, you can come up with something like what we call a canonical domain name. So where you can have facebook.lunaweb.com, and that reroutes to your Facebook page. You know, you could technically do the same type of thing. We could have twitter.lunaweb.com point to twitter.com/lunaweb, you know, to accomplish the same thing, to get people to our profile so that they can follow us, you know. And the nice thing about doing it that way is that the business that owns that domain name, the business itself is the controlling entity and not the platform like Facebook.
Right.
You know, imagine all your printed materials had something like facebook.com/lunaweb. And all of a sudden, you know, Facebook decides they're going to do some kind of crazy thing that you are opposed to. And now you've got this address on all your materials you're still sending people to, and you can't do anything about it. So, you know, a lot of businesses like to have that control. And that's one way to do it.
Well, a little bit earlier today, we had Eric Matthews from Launch Memphis in here, and we talked a little bit about some businesses he's involved with, like starting up in Memphis, and how they're using social technology to further what they're doing. So let's go ahead and cut into that.
Our guest this week is Eric Matthews. He's a co-founder of Launch Memphis and Mercury Technology Lab. So welcome to the expedition.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, great to have you. You know, this is what, a week after, no, 2 weeks after you were our key speaker at the Expedition yep. Breakfast.
A well-received talk, it seems.
Yeah, so. That was great. A lot of people know who you are, but they don't know much about you other than what you're doing these days. So give us a little bit of background.
All right. I guess my passion for entrepreneurship began in 2006 when I saw a lot of technologies sitting on the shelf at our universities and in corporate America, and I wanted to try to tackle that problem. And in fall 2006, Mark Diaz and I founded Mercury Technology Labs to help support venture creation in our community. And since then, we've been trying to tackle other entrepreneurial infrastructure problems and challenges that sit within our community. So from co-working environments, we formed up a relationship with Emerge Memphis and the local steelcase dealer, MBI, to create the Launchpad co-working environment at Emerge Memphis, 1,200 square feet. 2008, there was a groundswell of interest around creating dynamic entrepreneurial programs. And so myself and my business partner and nine others in our community came together, including yours truly, Dave Barger, to support entrepreneurial action with Launch Memphis. And so we have dynamic programs from investment forums to business plan boot camps, workshops, startup weekends, all in the pipeline. And we've been doing that for now over 2 years. I came to Memphis to go to Rhodes College, got a chemistry degree at Rhodes College, and directly after that, the economy was slumped because of 9/11, and so I decided to stick around and get a master's in cognitive psychology and continue doing artificial intelligence research at the University of Memphis, which I was doing when I was a junior and senior at Rhodes College. And from there, I got a role at the FedEx Institute of Technology to support the researchers there as the associate director for corporate R&D. And that's when I started to uncover our challenges with regard to technologies in our community. If you look at it, there's $2 billion a year in research being conducted in Tennessee. For every $2 million, there should be one patent. A couple of patents should be startups. Well, if you look at it, you know, I challenge any Memphian to name five startups. I bet they can't, that are sitting right here in our local community. Mm-hmm. And we need to change that if we're going to actually have a vibrant and economically rich community here. Yeah. So the things just, for me, just one thing came after the next, and I just followed whatever the next thing was.
All right. So. And so did I hear this right? You were born in Minnesota?
Yep, born in Minnesota. We moved to Nebraska, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and then to Arkansas, where I went to the last 3 years of high school.
So that's why you have, like, no accent.
Yes, it's blended everything. I, you know, just American.
Minnesota to Arkansas. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say this, I like being down south, and I don't like shoveling snow, and so my family, we've made a very concerted effort to remain down south permanently. So,
all right. You know, and I wonder, how long do you think you have to live somewhere before you can say you're from there?
You know, I'm thinking I'm coming up on that for Memphis. Right. So, it's, you know, I came to college here in 98, so it's been over a decade of living and breathing in the city, so I guess I'm more of a Memphian now than ever. Spent over a third of my life here.
Oh, good, good.
So that's pretty good commitment. Pretty good to say that. I guess I'm a Memphian.
You were kind of telling us briefly about a couple of startups that have some exciting things going on right now.
Yep, you know, especially as it relates to social media. Been working with Mark's Menus here at, you know, launched out of our Startup Weekend, which is the Launch Memphis program, and since then we've been engaged with them with Mercury Technology Labs to help support their growth. And what's been great at the turn of the year is we're seeing a lot of kind of buzz surrounding location-based services and, you know, the Yelps and the Foursquares of the world and Brightkites, and trying to look at how Mark's Menus interrelates to those trends that are occurring, because it looks like there's going to be a tidal wave of greater activity and greater usage by the U.S. consumer. And so if we want to move forward with this opportunity, we have to position ourselves to ride that wave. We are rapidly moving forward, and who knows, we'll maybe get to a national launch here in March. Of course, it's available nationwide, but we're not really publicizing it mm-hmm. nationwide. But if you look at it, we've got over 100 menus on there. They're from all over the country. Only a subset, maybe about 70 or so, are from Memphis. So there's probably another 40, 50 that are from all over the country. Restaurateurs are entering them in. There's a lot of threaded commenting that's occurring with the users engaging with the restaurateurs. So a lot of the things that we envisioned for the technology are coming to fruition through the usage. You know, we envisioned this use, and now it's occurring with the site. So that's very, very promising.
Great, great. Now, Mark's Menus, the Mark comes from Mark Dinstall.
Yes.
Right? And they were the winner of the escalator pitch competition.
Absolutely.
Put on by Launch Memphis here a couple months ago. And so that was, you know, springboarded a lot of, maybe some opportunities there. Or is that going on right now?
I would definitely say, especially as it relates now we're looking at trying to seize a market opportunity with this in the first quarter of this year. That prize package is going to lend itself well to kind of be a force multiplier to the activities that are underway at Mark's Menus. Now we're 6 months into it, 6-7 months into it, and mm-hmm. I can say there's a fantastic amount of progress, and they have a lot to be proud of. From winning the business escalator pitch competition to the market opportunity that is now crystallizing before them.
And what's the big differentiator? There's all kinds of menu type sites out there, but Mark's Menus is unique in which way, real quick, so we can kind of understand what's out there.
The problem with menus online is if you do find a menu online, which would be rare for a restaurant, it's usually out of date and it's usually a PDF. So that create, and it's an isolation sitting with that restaurant. What we've done is we've created a wiki-style environment for both restaurateurs and consumers to actually enter menu information and maintain that information. But the fundamental organizing paradigm is that we get down to the item level. People are actually entering individual items to the system. And as a result of that, we can actually do some very unique things, such as we can have item-level user commenting and rating. We have tags that are sitting there, the ingredient lists. So you can now can search all this rich menu information. So let's say you had some special dietary problems in your family. One person's a vegetarian. One person definitely wants to have their, you know, their steak. There's only one system you can turn to actually look at the intersection of those two opportunities, which is Mark's Menus, because of that item-level searchability. So in addition to that, I mean, there's people like Project Green Fork. All the Project Green Fork restaurants are tagged in Mark's Menus at a local level. And so other, you know, greening initiatives could also have their tags entered in there. So you could search for what are the green restaurants? What are the diabetes-friendly restaurant items? What's the top-rated burger in Memphis according to the users of Mark's Menus? And that creates, you know, some tremendous amount of value. Of course, then there's the social components, which is commenting, restaurateurs commenting back, some other light social components like recognition as being kind of a foodie. There's a point system that accumulates for your commenting and for your entry and your activity on the site. So we can get some more reliability scores around what who's commenting on what. And then also marketing directly to the consumer and moving into location-based applications, which are the next steps that the application will be built out to do. So that, let's say we're sitting here out in East Memphis. We want to go to someplace to eat. We pull up our phone, Mark's Menus app, and the three places within walking distance are sitting there. And one says, you know what, well, if you walk in right now, we'll give you $5 toward your meal. That's the type of powerful social location-based menu information that needs to be aggregated together. Mm-hmm. The menu is the most important interface. You know, once somebody looks at your menu, they're looking at making a purchase decision, which is pretty critical. That's why this is a good opportunity.
Wow. So instead of searching for Italian, I can search for veggie lasagna.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, right. How else would you be able to do that? Where are you going to find veggie? How many other, you know, look at the intersection of that. Where is the veggie lasagna in Memphis?
Mm-hmm.
There may only be three locations, but you're never going to be able to search for that unless you have a system like Mark's Menus in place. And this is a great platform. It's been built, and it's been being embraced.
Outstanding. So right now, is Memphis kind of a test market? Would you regard it as before going national?
Absolutely.
Know, kind of,
absolutely, you know? a test market. I think the next area we're going to be looking at is Austin. Mm-hmm. In preparation for South by Southwest.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So we're, you know, there's people that have been entering in menus from Austin, surprisingly, without us, and we're also having some folks enter them in here locally. So that maybe when the people at South by Southwest are having the munchies or, you know, just watched a film and they're like, hey, where should I go eat? Well, pull up Mark's Menus. I got a taste for a steak in Austin. Where am I going to go within walking distance? That's where we want to go with that. So.
All right. Well, outstanding. So that's at Mark's Menu.
Menus.
Okay.
MarksMenus.com.
All right. And now, what about the other thing, the Into Outdoors?
Oh, yeah, another exciting opportunity. So this week, the site is up and running. It's functional. They're doing some getting some bugs and feedback kinks worked out. Mm-hmm. And there is a kind of a community hacking session for supporters of startups to come together Thursday, the 21st in the evening at the Launchpad, 5:30 to 7. People are going to come together and kind of try to break the site because we need that type of heavy user use to make sure everything's working and functioning appropriately.
Yeah.
And then next week it'll be pushed around very actively on the blogs from our beta testers that signed up in advance, et cetera. We're going to be pushing it forward and hope to reach 500 to 1,000 users within 2 weeks to continue to grow that opportunity. So it's a pretty powerful thing. So I actually probably should back up. Into Outdoors is a site for hunting, fishing, wildlife enthusiasts to come together and collaborate. It embraces a lot of functionality you see on Facebook, as well as some custom stuff that's really specific to the hunting and fishing world, like brag boards, bragging about the biggest, the tall tail fish you caught, pictures, images, articles, tips, packages, things like that are going to be relevant. There's actually a very unique dashboard system that's sitting in there as well, so that you actually can customize your home interface and rearrange things and say, all right, I want this feed from here. I want my friends to sit here, all customizable down to your preferences. So there's some kind of exciting things on that front. And there's really no system out there that matches it for this this niche community. So we're excited about it. But the value of getting other users on there is, one, you have different perspectives. You're going to have different use cases that you probably would never have invented or thought of. Furthermore, it's also going to create a little bit of buzz. So people are going to say, well, I got on there and talked, they looked at it, and they're going to start telling their friends. So it's a way for us to actually kind of utilize the real-world social structures of friends and relationships to actually kind of build community and mind share around the product. So
that's outstanding. I think, I'm going to be part of that testing tomorrow.
All right.
Well, on the 21st. And if there's a section in there for shooting wildlife with cameras, I think that'll be the group that I'm in.
That's the other interesting thing about it is, we have built this system. We think it's great for hunters and fishers, but we actually don't know that. So the people that are going to come in tomorrow, they may say, I'm really into kayaking, or I'm really into rock climbing. And this site may generalize more so than we think. There's obviously a lot of hunters and fishers out there. 87.6 million Americans above the age of 16 are into wildlife recreation.
And this is the product of, I guess, Josh Bell's had the original thought on.
Yep, Josh Bell. This is his baby. And by the way, this is a major milestone for him. He's been waiting 4 years to have a up and running site. He's been through the ups and downs and the development nightmares along the way. He's been unfortunately burned in the past, and but finally the day has come. He has an up and running site at intooutdoors.com. So he's got a lot to be proud of.
We're going to be getting together with him this weekend to shoot some video for the site.
Awesome.
So let's kind of help him tell his story with that. So you got the Launch Memphians out there supporting, the Launch Memphis, these other Launch Memphis type activities, this kind of a grassroots community of these tech folks that are out there. What do we know or is penciled in on the calendar for 2010? What's coming up here?
Well,
Penciled in.
Yes, we are definitely going to do. We're going to do a new variation on Startup Weekend, which is we're going to calling it 48-hour launch. It was run in Chattanooga, and we'll be the second city in the country to run 48-hour launch. And we're looking at starting that for early March. So that's a 48-hour experience where about 100 people from our community, from all walks of life, lawyers, graphic designers, web designers, software developers, all come together, and we develop and launch new businesses. Other things that we're tapping into is looking at an investment forum in April, business plan boot camp for late March. And we're also doing a tribe camp, notably, and probably in late April, it looks like. So that's also going to be a fantastic new program that we're going to be bringing to Memphis. We like to kind of switch it up and change things up. We've been trying to, every season, we bring a new twist to entrepreneurship and a new program to try to kind of re-engage folks. Another thing to probably look out for on your calendars is there's some interest in developing a web series online to document entrepreneurship stories in our community and disseminate those, kind of tell the stories, identify and kind of make some new role models in our community, new rock stars for people to look up to and look at. And well, actually, I guess the main thing I look forward to out of it is showing that people are taking risks, they're betting on themselves, and they're betting on the city to start companies.
Outstanding. So we can get more information on that.
All at launchmemphis.com. We'll have our schedule up probably over this weekend. So probably, wait for it for the 23rd, 24th. We'll get that up, and we'll be off to the races for another great season of entrepreneurship in 2010.
Outstanding. Because we were kind of wrapping up 2009. There was a recognition from the state.
Absolutely. We've been very active and supportive in our community and kind of a nexus point at Launch Memphis for a variety of activities in the state. As a result of that and our participation in Global Entrepreneurship Week, reached out to us and we got a proclamation from the Economic and Community Development Commissioner, Matt Kisper, thanking us for all of our efforts. And I think that's going to continue, actually. I'm heading off to Nashville tomorrow to work with the Tennessee Technology Development Corporation about what else can be done to support entrepreneurship throughout the state. So there's obviously a lot of interest and activity around this, and that's how we got to create jobs. This is the most effective way and cheapest way to create jobs, is starting things up.
Outstanding. Well, Eric Kay, thanks so much for joining us today. And how do we stay in touch with you online? What's the best place to do that?
I would say two fronts. You can reach me, of course, at eric@launchmemphis.com if you want to reach out to me personally. But Twitter is probably the best feed into my life and the activities that we have undergoing at Launch Memphis and how we're supporting entrepreneurship here locally. And my Twitter handle is ecmatthews, Matthews with one T, So reach out to me and give me a follow. I always follow back Memphians, so feel free to give me a follow.
Outstanding. And so speaking of Memphians, mm-hmm. we cannot wrap this thing up, you know, without talking about the Mercury Tech coffee. You know, amazingly, yeah, we got to talk about that. So,
well, you went to it for the first
finally,
time.
I finally
it's
made
been,
it.
It's been almost a year in the making for your arrival, but you made it. What was your experience?
I thought it was really great. There was a good mix of people there, and the conversation just seemed to flow from one thing, it segued into the next, and I had to leave early, take care of a client, and so it was great. I certainly want to get back there next Monday.
Your experience is exactly what we wanted to create. Start off your Monday from 7:30 to 9:30 at Republic Coffee. Come and go as you please. Maybe you get a to-go cup and just say hello to some folks, or stay in, dive into a conversation. Maybe leave at 8:30 and head off to the office. But we wanted to create an environment where people could talk about new ideas, some innovative technologies, some community change opportunities, social media, just the latest and greatest that's can affect people's lives positively in our community. And that way you can start your week off with that kind of their first and foremost on your mind. That's what we do it. So again, Mercury Tech Coffee is at 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. at Republic Coffee every Monday. And we also have, so we started a Facebook group about it. Great. As well.
Yeah.
So Mercury Tech Coffee / OJ.
Yeah,
since somebody said that since I was drinking OJ, it doesn't count. It shouldn't be called Mercury Tech Coffee. It should be Mercury Tech OJ. But, you know, I'm just trying to be agnostic to the beverages out there.
Well, I'd say the caffeine in the coffee there was excellent. I spent the rest of the day with a nice little buzz. So it was good.
Good.
All right. Well, Eric, hey, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Man, quite a guy. I mean, we exceeded our normal time, but he's got a lot of stuff going on. And also, I just realized this must be, we're almost having like an Eric week here with the social expedition.
That's right.
This is Friday.
Definitely.
This Friday we have Eric Maskell, who is the gentleman who is responsible for our theme music. He's going to be coming on the Core Conversation, which is going to be at 11:30 on Friday, as always. And you can find out more information about that at socialexpedition.com or by following us on Twitter at SM Expedition. We're going to be talking about Creative Commons and
how
music.
He's using social to promote himself and his own
Absolutely.
Personal brand.
So hopefully, we're hoping that we're going to have some people or a person perhaps from Creative Commons to call and chat with us. We've reached out to them. So hopefully that will be happening as well. Either way, it should be an interesting conversation, so you don't want to miss that.
Yeah. Speaking of promotions, you know, big kudos to Carrie over there with the Memphis CVB, who's on the cover of the Memphis Flyer.
That is my wife. I'm extremely proud of her, I've got to say.
Disclosure.
Yeah. She's basically been making a big racket on Twitter with her I Love Memphis Twitter account. It's twitter.com/ILoveMemphis, all one word. Just, you know, calling out some great places to visit around town, some great places to eat. She's also got a really excellent blog called the I Love Memphis blog. It's ILoveMemphisBlog.com. And, basically the Flyer's putting out an issue. Though the issue came out today, and they've got a story called 20 Under 30, and it's focusing on a lot of influential Memphians. And, you know, given that she's got the I Love Memphis sign that people take pictures with, she was really, like, just a natural choice for the cover because all the people featured in the article are helping promote Memphis in some way, trying to make our community a much better place. Also featured, notably, is our friend Stephen Hackett, who, he's on Twitter under the username ISMH. He is a Mac-focused blogger. He has worked with Apple computers in some way for years. He's also a journalist. But what's most notable is that his son Josiah is not even a year old and has brain cancer. So in tweeting about this, he's basically created this hashtag, GoJGo, that a lot of Memphis Twitter users have latched onto. And basically what Stephen's doing is just drawing a lot of attention to St. Jude's.
The J is for Josiah.
Yes.
Okay. Great.
He's an adorable kid. You know, you wouldn't know that he's undergoing chemo, that he's got brain cancer. He's just grinning all the time in all the pictures Stephen posts.
I've seen the photos of him. That is outstanding. And no doubt a real trial for a young family like that. Mm-hmm. So that's great that social media is kind of creating more awareness of what's going on there, and I guess in some cases actually making a difference or helping out there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fantastic. Okay, so what do we got? We've got, man, we're this week we've got the Twilight Camp.
That's right. That will have happened.
Yes.
By the time you're listening to this. Yes.
Yeah, so maybe we'll be talking about it Friday on the show with Eric and the whole core.
The core creative, conversation, yes, with Creative Commons.
With Creative Commons. Have any luck with getting in touch with the Creative Commons folks?
I've reached out to them, so yep. We're hoping that they're going to be able to join us.
That's great. That's great, because they're very much interested in supporting what's you know what people are doing. So hopefully we can have them there as well.
Hoping so.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, that's about all the time we've got. So
thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Take care. See ya.
The Social Expedition Podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. Your hosts are Dave Barger, Elizabeth K. Wine, and Matthew Crawford Trissler, who edits the podcast. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskell, available at ericmaskell.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.
And there's music playing.
There is music playing. You know, I just thought it would lend a nice ambiance to the podcast. Let me go ahead and mute that.